now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here tonight, every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And each and every week, these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the context of our relationships, relationships that we have with ourselves, relationships that we have with others, and certainly our relationship with God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit our website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to be part of the show this evening, I'll give you the number for you to please call in. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break tonight. And these broadcasts are now podcasted, just in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Just go back and visit the website and then just click on where it says archives, and then you can find the particular title and week that you would like to listen to. And here we are outside of Christmas, 5 days until Christmas. And for those of you who just might be tuning in for the very first time, I just wanted to say welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in. It really means a lot to me. And I just wanted to say from the outset to kind of, you know, bring you up to speed as to, you know, those who have been listening and staying with me for some time, that in all sincerity, it really doesn't matter who we are or where we were born or even into what family we were placed. Ours is just filled with relationships. And indeed, we are social beings who often spend our lives trying to make sense of our world by trying to find our place in the world. And this is something that we can just, you know, we cannot get around. You know, we are just born into relationships. And so that is often the greater backdrop, if you will, or the greater context in which all conversations like this, like the integration of spirituality and our mental health are placed. And we have to place them in relationships because this is exactly where our, let's say, our growth and opportunities and a sense of who we are and understanding of the gifts that we bring and so on and so forth tend to show up in and through relationships. But you know, excuse me there for a second. You know, as social beings, it is kind of ironic that it's often within the context of these relationships that we may just experience tremendous pain and suffering from overt acts of betrayal or overt acts of cruelty that has plagued humanity from day one on down through the centuries, that people have inflicted against one another, or maybe they have inflicted it against us, or even vice versa. Maybe there's times when we just acted very cruel ways to other people, ourselves, or to just simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Many, many people bear the scars of their physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual woundedness. And yet, ironically, Just as we experience our woundedness in and through relationships, it's also within the healthy context of better relationships that we can find our healing, our voice, our authenticity. But the difficulty then is often finding the courage to discover that which has always been in you. In fact, let's take this one step further. Finding the courage to discover who you always have been. You know, not just a little twist on that statement right there, which takes it to another level for us. You know, when we start to consider who we always have been and just what does that look like, and coming back to reclaiming or remembering who we always have been. And in part of this, finding the courage to discover that which has always been in us, I'm talking about, you know, those gifts, those graces, those skills, and certainly our uniqueness that we have come into the world with. This is a Latin word, hacietas, or a thisness, which was a phrase that was actually coined by John Duns Scotus. He was a Scottish Franciscan around 1308, I believe. But it's hacietas, it's a thisness. And this is often, you know, a very abstract understanding that I try to explain to the kids that I counsel, or the teenagers, even some adults, that the best way I can put it in terms that everybody can understand a thisness is that whenever we look at our thumbs, we see a thumbprint. You know, everybody has a thumbprint. Everybody has a fingerprint. But yet no two thumbprints are alike. In fact, that's how we are distinguished from one another, is by our fingerprints or our thumbprint. So everybody has a thisness, not just based on those thumbprints, but the uniqueness that we have in terms of what we come into this world with. And even though two or three people are doing similar jobs, or maybe they're doing the identical jobs, no two people are going to do the same job exactly, because you're going to bring your uniqueness to the task or the project, or whatever it is that you're focused on at the moment. And this is a uniqueness that comes shining through. And quite often we have to expand our understanding. Think outside the box, as it will, but, you know, let's just kind of move away from the box mentality here. And just thinking in terms of a larger context where, you know, we use our thisness and our skills each and every day. And by that, I mean, I've had some pretty interesting conversations with folks over the past couple of weeks about just expanding their understanding and their perspectives of exactly what they do in any given moment and who they are. So the classic example of this would be that you have two people who, you know, have shovels and they're digging a ditch. You know, they're just in some empty lot and they're just digging away. And you come up to one person and you just say, you know, hey, you know, what y'all doing? You know, and the first person will stop shoveling and say, well, I got to dig this hole here. You know, I got to, this is what I got to do. This is what I'm going to be doing all day long. But you go to the next person and just say, hey, what you doing? What you up to? And that other person might say, I'm building a church, or I'm building a building which will employ thousands of people. You know, and you have, again, differences in perspective, even though they're doing the same job. And the same thing is true when we're talking about our uniqueness, our hacietas, our thisness. Because I am a firm believer that we all come into this world with everything we already need for ourselves and for others. But through various experiences we may be tempted, or maybe we've just flat out given away parts of ourselves, if not the whole of that uniqueness or that thisness. And perhaps we did this because we felt as though that we just simply couldn't live up to another person's expectation of us, no matter how hard we tried. And we didn't realize that it's never meant, you know, we're never meant to live up to those expectations, because those expectations are always changing. Plus, they're based on somebody else's definition of who they think that we need to be for them and so forth. Or maybe, you know, growing up, you had to hide your uniqueness from others in order to survive abuse. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves that have been taken away from us, and we just didn't have the strength or the wherewithal to be able to fight that. So either way, whenever we become aware that we have done these things, this is where it takes tremendous courage to reclaim who we are. And we can reclaim our voice, our uniqueness, our thisness. Franklin Delano Roosevelt once said about courage that courage is not really the absence of fear, but rather it is the assessment that something else is more important than fear. And that's a good point. And just in case you're wondering what reclaiming authenticity is all about, it's this very thing. It's this very notion of the integration of the spirituality and our mental health. And so this is a daunting task, and, you know, but it's something that we can do. It's something that we can do. But you know, in speaking of relationships, and the holidays are right around the corner, you know, with us, those who celebrate Christmas and Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, we may find that relationships just might be within our own families where we struggle with, or we suffer with the physical wounds or the emotional wounds or the spiritual wounds or even the mental wounds. They just might be within our own families or amongst our coworkers and even our friends. But you know, whenever we transform, whenever we have the courage and find the courage to be able to reclaim that which we've always been, we also start to transform others by our presence, by our grace and understanding. Because when we start to heal, we begin to see all things that we are in relationship to changing. We see things differently. We see people differently. We have a better understanding. But first, forgiveness and kindness and compassion begins with how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can be more compassionate with others. And when we are forgiving of ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves and to be grateful for all things, we then discover how this opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. In fact, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And that is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about, finding the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and who you have always been. And you know, recently, when you think about the celebration of Hanukkah itself, it clearly communicates something about the human spirit that survives even the worst of tragedies. And speaks to how it allows people to rebuild shattered lives or broken institutions and injured nations. And that is the power of faith and the light of an inextinguishable hope. So again, happy Hanukkah for those who have celebrated Hanukkah. Merry Christmas to those who are looking forward to celebrating Christmas, and a happy new year for those who are looking forward to celebrating the new year. Well, last month, Hindus and Sikhs and Jains all over the world celebrated the Festival of Lights, as it's called, Diwali. It's a joyous occasion, and many of my friends over in India look forward to this all year long, because with one of its core themes of being the triumph of light over darkness and the celebration of good over evil. And it is a festival, I should say, of lights that's held on the darkest night during a dark time of the year. And that's when they believe when people really need light. And how often, just think about it in your own lives, how often do our celebrations involve light or even lighting candles? And it's more than just lighting lamps and candles. You know, we put candles on a birthday cake. We light rooms at night so we can see. We have flashlights. We have lights on our phone and so on and so forth. And it's more than just lighting those lamps and candles. In fact, it's a power of faith and the light of an inextinguishable hope, which fills our hearts. And speaking of an inextinguishable hope, this is exactly the theme for this broadcast here tonight. And so, although I typically wait until after the break to take calls, I'm going to take your calls periodically if you call in ahead of time before and after the break today. Because in the past couple of weeks, I've noticed how many people are just being overly stressed out for this particular Christmas season. I mean, from running around trying to find that perfect present to place under the tree, to finding the right tree to begin with, to coordinating meal preparations or travel schedules, people's stress and anxiety levels just appear to be at an all-time high compared to previous years. In fact, it seems as though, somewhere in my conversations with others, I find myself wanting to say, wow, with all the preparation and everything, that sounds like a great time, but don't miss the joy and the light and the gratitude of the season. Because we can get so wrapped up in the preparations, we can get so wrapped up in the details that when the day finally comes to celebrate, are we exhausted? Are we too exhausted to really enjoy all the hard work? Well, one of my all-time favorite Christmas movies is A Charlie Brown Christmas. And if you know me, you'd say, yeah, of course. It's a classic. Ever since it aired back in 1965. And it's a simple message, you know, even though it's in a cartoon form, the message is very powerful. But it's a simple message of a boy who has just been searching for the real meaning of Christmas that reminds all of us that living in joy and peace and gratitude is not just for one day. But when we live from our souls, we experience these things every day. In fact, there is depth to each of these aspects once we place them in the context of relationships. Well, let's shift gears a little bit and just begin with tonight's broadcast of All I Want for Christmas is Hope by, I'll tell you what, let's begin with a question, okay? What is the weirdest Christmas list you've ever seen? What's the weirdest Christmas list you've ever seen? What's the weirdest thing people have ever asked for? Maybe you've asked for something weird this year from Santa or whatever. Well, last week I came across a couple of different letters to Santa Claus sites. And it's not that they're weird, it's more like they're cute, you know, but it comes from the typical child's Christmas list. And immediately, I was reminded of all the songs and carols we have about Christmas lists. You know, there's All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth from Spike Jones. And then Alvin and the Chipmunks did a remake of this classic. And then there's the Mariah Carey version of All I Want for Christmas is You. And then finally, there's the Amy Grant's version of My Grown-Up Christmas List. So here's just a few of the requests that children sent to Santa Claus. First one reads, Dear Santa, I want a little brother or sister. Nothing out of the ordinary there. Year after year, one of the most popular kids' Christmas requests is for a younger sibling. And as such, many parents may choose to announce the impending arrival of a new baby, close to Christmas or so. Another child said, "Dear Santa, I want a mermaid puppy." Okay, what would be better than a mermaid or a puppy than, let's say, a combination of two? I don't know what a mermaid puppy looks like, but, many kids ask for puppies and kittens and things like that. Another child said, "Dear Santa, I want a real live unicorn." Not bad, not bad. We'll see if Santa Claus can deliver on that one. And another child said, "Dear Santa, I want a goat cart." Not a go-kart, a goat, G-O-A-T, car, a goat car. And I don't know exactly what that is, but, we're kind of curious about the concept. This is a kid, who just has real creativity and he just might be onto something. Another child said, "Dear Santa, I want a gumball machine." Not bad. Wishing for something that you just can't get at home. Okay. And that would be kind of fun as well. And one child, he said, "Dear Santa, I want a wheelchair." Now, whether a child is asking for a wheelchair for himself or herself or a relative, asking for a wheelchair is just a very sobering holiday wish. And other kids' wishes are presents for their parents. Kids often understand that parents work hard and don't always get the presents that they, want for Christmas, but hey, Santa, can you come through for mom and dad? Some children, said, "Dear Santa, I want you to stop bullies." And again, that's another one of these sobering thoughts that there's such a request, such as bullies at school to stop picking on a sibling or maybe even themselves. One child said, "Dear Santa, I want a cure for cancer." And wishing for a cure for cancer is something that many people can identify with, whether it's among kids or adults. And then the last one is, "Dear Santa, I just want hugs and kisses from my relatives in heaven." And when you're missing a loved one during these holidays, certainly sending a hug or a kiss would make all the difference. Well, what have your children or grandchildren wished for on Christmas? What did you wish for as a child? Well, hopefully we don't grow out of these lists. I just hope we don't, because as we grow older, let's say our tastes become a little bit more sophisticated. So just very quickly, just what's on your Christmas list? And have you started making a list, or are you one of these last-minute shoppers? Well, imagine for a second that out of everything you've asked God for in your life, when was the last time you asked for hope? Out of everything you've asked God for throughout your life, when was the last time you asked God specifically for hope? And as I said, with the celebration of Hanukkah and preparing for the Christmas season of 2023, many people might be getting into a panic over the realization that there's so much to do and so little time to get everything done. So where's the hope? What do you hope for this year? Because you see, for many people, what is often promoted as the most wonderful time of the year often becomes one of the darkest times of the year. I mean, for some people, this holiday season is a season of loneliness, one that they're being separated from family members and loved ones. Or maybe it's a season of hurt or disappointment. Or maybe even a season of despair, or frustration, or hopelessness. And yet, for those who know the stories of, say, Hanukkah and Christmas, we know that the backdrop, let's say, upon which these stories were painted, were during times that were filled with darkness, times in which people were in search of something to believe in, times in which people who, you know, want to feel connected and accepted and loved for who they are. A time when their souls were starving for something better, more than just the latest fad or trend. Something that provides real nourishment for the soul. And this is where the message of hope comes in. It is a light that shines in the darkness. And hope is a very, very powerful thing when it comes to sustaining life. Because there's an old truism out there that says, we can only live about 3-4 minutes without air, or 4 days without water, or we can live maybe about 40 days without food. But we cannot last 4 seconds without hope. And hope is a word commonly used these days to mean a wish, and therefore, it's strength. The strength is the strength of a person's wish or desire. But in Scripture, hope is the confident expectation of what God has promised, and its strength is in God's faithfulness. And it's always linked to what God does in God's timing. And one thing hope is not is that hope isn't a warm fuzzy, but rather it's strong, it's unshakable, it's a solid foundation. The spiritual power of hope can help us overcome any trial. In fact, some people define hope as a lifeline to God. And hope is also understood these days as an outcome that makes your life better in some way. It can not only help make a difficult situation more tolerable, but also hope can actually improve our lives, because when we're able to imagine a better future, hope motivates us to take the steps to make it happen. Now, historically speaking, people who struggle to find hope in their lives typically also struggle with symptoms of depression and or anxiety, something that they're struggling with. And there is a sense of hopelessness and despair, not only what has happened in the past, but also exactly just what might happen in the future. And that kind of perpetual illness was often met with seclusion from the community, or one being placed in a psychiatric facility, which further compounded the feelings of separation and loneliness. I mean, there was a time in history where society said, well, let's see, we don't want to be reminded of this. So out of sight, out of mind, and people would just be warehoused, never to be seen or heard from again. And down through the ages, people who suffered with more serious mental health conditions were often secluded in communal living situations and relentless, harmful treatment programs. And they were often told that they could never live independently or work independently or even have a family. And so this perpetual illness was therefore seen as very bleak, hopeless, and miserable. And yet, nowadays, we understand that regardless of a person's depression or anxious symptoms, a person can actually thrive in a positive and supportive environment. In fact, the more support one receives from family members and their faith communities, the more enabled they feel to begin living each day in the present, living each day in hope. And hope is powerful and transformative when it is lived out in a shared humanity. Well, as I said at the beginning of this broadcast, I would really love to hear your heart on this subject of hope and light shining in the darkness. So if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this break. So again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Howe. Be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, I just want to say a quick word about the next show, which will be featured on January the 3rd, 2024. Yes, a whole new year. And every other Wednesday, again, at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And it's entitled The Spirit of Animals. And just want to toss this out there just to get you thinking, you kind of prime the pump, as it were, that what animals are showing up in your life? What animals keep showing up in your dreams? What animals do you seem to connect with more than others? And this is something that can often start in childhood. As you know, we're often given like little stuffed animals, or if you have a child or a grandchild, you know, you just feel led to get them a tiger or an elephant or a giraffe or something like that. And I, you know, the older I get, I have to say I'm less and less intrigued by what people call coincidences. I just have seen too much to know that there might be something else going on behind the scenes. And so that particular animal just might have a strong connection to a child or a sibling or even the animals in our lives. So what's interesting, down through history, that ancestors, our ancestors, may have often studied the characteristics in order to better understand how God often works through animals in order to answer our prayers or to even help us. And I'll just share this real quick. I'll share this also on the third. But there was a time when my last time I was visiting India, and I was up in the Himalayan mountains, the Himalayas. And we were just on this secluded road, and it was during daylight. And all of a sudden, up in front of us, what jumped down off of this hill was a snow leopard. And it was beautiful. It was just totally, you know, just beautiful, beautiful animal. Well, that thing stopped right in the middle of the road and looked straight at me. And I looked straight at him. And fortunately, I was in a vehicle, so I wasn't too worried. But that animal did not move until, you know, of course, the horn was hit by the driver. And then, the leopard takes off. And the driver was more, you know, intrigued by this than I was initially, and he just said, you know, you don't see snow leopards at night because they hunt, or I'm sorry, that you don't see snow leopards during the day, sorry about that, got that backwards, because they hunt at night. And to see a snow leopard out and stop like that is just very rare. And I took that to mean that, well, what's the connection of a leopard and myself and the Himalayan mountains? And so I just did some research when I got back here to the States and just found some interesting spiritual connections of just how exactly, you know, God may have been speaking through that particular animal. But I'll share more of that story on January the 3rd at 9 o'clock, you know, on Wednesday, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, with the show entitled The Spirit of Animals. Well, earlier in the broadcast, we were talking about the power of hope, especially, especially during difficult times where hope shines the brightest when the hour is often the darkest, and how hope motivates people when discouragement comes, and how hope can energize when the body is tired. And hope can often be that sweetness when bitterness starts to nip at us. And hope sings when all melodies are gone. And hope believes when the evidence is limited. And hope listens for the answers when really nobody's talking. And hope climbs over obstacles when no one is helping. Hope endures hardships when no one is caring. Hope smiles confidently when no one is laughing. Hope reaches for answers when nobody is asking. Hope presses toward victory when no one is encouraging. Hope dares to give when no one is sharing, and hope brings the victory when nobody is winning. See, hope is that powerful. And it's not just a pie in the sky, I hope this happens, a wish kind of thing, but hope is always grounded in reality. In fact, as I explain it to most people, when we get on the subject of hope and faith, where people are in the present, you know, they ask, well, how do you have hope that carries you into the future? Like, how do you know God will be there? How do you know that God will answer prayers? And I always take them back into the past and just say, when was the time when God answered another prayer of yours? Or when was the time when you were reminded of tremendous kindness in this world? Or when was the time when you had the encouragement and the hope that you would get through a very difficult time in your life? And based on that, we can have hope, not just for the present, but also for the future. So I've kind of coined the expression of, you know, faith is really like a backwards looking kind of hope, you know we can confidently go forward in our lives, regardless of the circumstances, the situations, or whatever obstacles that are in our way, when we are reminded of hope that came into our lives in the past. So keep that in mind. You know, it's something that is just very encouraging. But, you know, go take a personal inventory of just how hope has been that powerful for you. Well, speaking of hope, and earlier this year, I read an article that looked at mental health first responders who had been working with victims of hurricanes and tornadoes and fires and mudslides and any other kind of natural disaster. And they were interviewed, and they found that there were two types of physical survivors. And they categorized them as this. There were psychological victims, and then there were psychological survivors. And the psychological victims typically were people who tended to look at life more pessimistically by interpreting what had happened to them as a pattern or a series of unfortunate events, let's say, that seemed to follow them wherever they went. And yet, on the other hand, there were psychological survivors. And these were people who were more active, more optimistic, and they looked to the future. I mean, yes, they grieved their losses, which is a healthy response, but they continued to persevere, and they pressed on. Now, the interesting aspect from this study that I took away was that people viewed themselves and how they viewed themselves. And it had nothing to do with money or their education level or how much they had lost or how many loved ones had died. Instead, it seemed to be that it all hinged on the power of hope that a person embraced in their lives. In other words, resiliency. To have hope and to have resiliency really is to find ways to empower yourself in order to face the toughest of times and emerge a survivor. So what does this have to do with change and transformation and growth? Everything. When we are hopeful and when we have hope that things and people, including ourselves, have the ability to be able to transform and grow and change and maintain that transformation in their lives, we are then intrinsically motivated to set goals and act on them in order to achieve those goals and reinforce that hope and optimism. In other words, hope often spurs on more hope. hope that is firm, anchored firmly, just often spawns new aspects of where else do we find hope in our lives? Because overall, having hope and holding out a more optimistic view of not only ourselves, but also others and the world as a whole, really acts as a motivator for us to reach our own goals and make positive changes in our lives. And yet, hope is more than just, let's say, a state of mind, and it should be looked at as a personal strength. And hope allows us a resource for motivation, let's say, to pursue our goals and change, and gives us, you know, just renewed optimism and the resiliency to pick ourselves up when things don't always go as planned. Hope and transformation go hand in hand. Hope brings about optimism and motivation to reach our goals and to make and maintain positive change in our lives. Test this out for yourselves. What hope do you hold out for 2024? What goals have you set for yourself? What's keeping you from acting on those goals? What are the obstacles? What are the ways in which, you know, you might feel tempted to talk yourself out of it? In what ways does hope empower you? What ways is hope really a catalyst in which you not only just find that strength for yourself, but also encouraging and giving the strength to others? Hope and transformation indeed go hand in hand. And, you know, ironically, embracing hope also enhances our capacity for forgiveness, which then enables us to live in gratitude more deeply. And when we are able to live in gratitude, as I said at the beginning of this broadcast, it opens up our hearts to love more fully. I'm going to say that again, because this is a very important understanding here, you know, in which we can, you know, where hope takes us. Embracing hope also enhances our capacity for forgiveness, which enables us to live in gratitude more deeply. Because when we're able to live in gratitude, it opens up our hearts to love more fully. Hope, forgiveness, gratitude, and love. And this is where the transformation shifts people from being a victim to being a survivor. And for that matter, being one who is able to thrive. So, how has hope been getting your attention this year? Where has hope been nudging you or whispering in your ear or saying, don't give up? Where has hope been getting your attention this year? How has hope been speaking to you? Well, I had an interesting conversation with a gentleman that I know who is in recovery from alcoholism, and he's doing quite well, and he's working his steps, and, you know, just many years in sobriety, and he's become, you know, just quite a dear friend, and I just really am grateful for the progress that he has made in his life and how he has given back to others. And we were talking about this message of hope and gratitude and love and so forth and thriving. And he reminded me of, let's say, the third step prayer in the big book of AA, which is translated, God, I give myself to you. You use me as you want. Relieve me of my self-will so that I may better do your will. Take away my fears. Take away my selfishness, take away my self-centeredness, so that I can be an example of your power, your love, and your way of life to others. And here is another key to understanding hope, that people seeing the potential for transformation and healing that hope offers. Being able to see the potential of transformation in ourselves is one thing, but being able to see that same potential in others takes it to a whole new level. And this is where hope really begins to speak to people, because you begin to act on it. You begin to say, it's not my will. My selfishness has nowhere to belong here. And I don't want to do anything that comes across as being self-centered. Okay. Key to understanding hope, people seeing the potential for transformation and healing that hope offers. Well, you remember the story of Annie Sullivan, the teacher and friend of Helen Keller, who was blind and mute. And well, before they became friends, Annie was hired to be Helen's caretaker and teacher. And when she was about 19 months old, under 2 years, an illness, which is believed to be scarlet fever back in the day, left Helen deaf, blind, and mute. And she was often described as an excitable, energetic child, and she showed such signs of great intelligence that her mother looked beyond the fact that she couldn't hear or speak or see. And she saw the potential of this intelligence. And so her mother sent for a private teacher. And this teacher, as the story goes, was Ann Sullivan, herself formerly blind, and she managed to break through to communicate with Helen. And there's been many stories told, but this happens to be just my favorite version of the story, that initially Annie found Helen in a dark basement, locked in a cage. And one day she decided to, start eating her lunch down in the basement with Helen, and would even sneak some food to her, or even give her some of her own food. And just the friendship and the trust started to develop from there. And eventually Helen responded, go figure. Helen started to respond to this act of kindness and was brought up out of the basement, where she was exposed to fresh air and sunshine. And Helen started to improve more and more. And over time, Helen started to do very well. The intelligence came through, and that she learned to communicate, and she even excelled in her intelligence. And eventually she went on to school, and she there excelled in her studies. And throughout her life, she wrote several books, including The Story of My Life, way back in 1903. And also in that same year, she wrote Optimism, and then the book The World I Live In 1908. And then Light in My Darkness and My Religion, two separate writings in 1927. And then Helen Keller's Journal in 1938. And then The Open Door in 1957. And way back in 1913, prior to World War I, she began lecturing with the aid of an interpreter, primarily on behalf of the American Foundation for the Blind. Because all in all, you never know how a spark of hope is going to change another person's life, even to this day. But when you have the ability to be able to see the potential of other people, your hope brings them hope. That hope speaks that life and that gratitude and love into their lives. And it creates wonderful transformation. Well, I also wanted to share with you another story suitable for, Christmas, and perhaps many of you already know the story of St. Nicholas. And I want to share this with you because I often end up sharing this story with parents whose children are right on the cusp of the age of, well, do we tell them about Santa Claus or do we not? Or how do we handle this when they ask, well, is Santa Claus real? And I always share with them the story of St. Nicholas, which is a true, authentic, historical person. And St. Nicholas was a Christian bishop who was known to help the needy. And after his death, the legend of his gift giving just kept growing and growing and growing. And St. Nicholas transformed into the legendary character called Santa Claus, who brings Christmas presents to children all around the world. But St. Nicholas was born around 280 AD in Lycia, as an area of the part of the present-day Turkey. And he lost both of his parents as a young man and reportedly used his inheritance to help the poor and the sick. And there's many legends, I should say, about St. Nicholas. One story goes that how he helped three poor sisters. The father did not have enough money to pay for their dowries, and the father thought of selling them into servitude. And St. Nicholas just happened to be passing by the window where the three daughters or the three sisters were just commiserating over, what are we going to do? We just don't have the money. We're not going to be able to be married. And so we're going to have to live a life of servitude and so forth. And three times, St. Nicholas secretly went to their houses, or I should say went to the house at night, and he tossed a bag of money up through the window. And so every night, you know, which one of the sisters said, you know, wow, what an answer to prayer. Now we don't have to live a life of servitude. Now we have our dowry money. And the man used the money so that his daughters could marry. But on the third visit, a man saw St. Nicholas and he thanked him for his kindness. And he also reportedly saved three men who were falsely imprisoned and sentenced to death. Okay. And as I said, the children's message of St. Nicholas just continued to grow and grow and grow. And let's see, I think it was the Dutch immigrants brought the legend of St. Nicholas, known to them as Sint Nicolaas, or by his nickname, Sinterklaas, to America in the 1700s. And then it just grew from there. And Sinterklaas became Santa Claus. And instead of giving gifts on December 6th, back in the day, he became part of the Christmas holiday. And so way back in 1820, in a poem, there was an account of a visit from St. Nicholas by Clement Clark Moore, who describes St. Nicholas as a jolly, heavy man who comes down the chimney to leave presents for deserving children, and he drives a sleigh pulled by flying reindeer. And by 1881, the cartoonist Thomas Nast, he drew Santa as wearing a red suit with white fur trim. And once a kind, charitable bishop, St. Nicholas had become Santa Claus that we know today. That and the fact that in the 1920s, Coca-Cola had just so happened to put a Coke in Santa Claus' hands, and they made millions and millions and millions of dollars off that marketing campaign. So whenever you see billboards now with Santa Claus with tipping a bottle of Coca-Cola that says "Have a Coke and a smile, Merry Christmas," you now know where that comes from. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. With only 5 days to Christmas, I just want to wish everybody out there just a wonderful Christmas Eve and a wonderful Christmas Day. And may you always look at the potential in another person to spread hope, peace, light, and love this holiday and this Christmas season. Take care.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.